Judiciary Committee, January 28th, 1977, 1:30 p.m., room 350.
Chairman, members of the subcommittee, for the record, my name is Ed Sullivan, Governor's Office. I am representing the Governor's Task Force on Corrections on HB 2276. The emphasis of 2276 is to raise witness fees in both civil and criminal cases. The task force looked at this in attempting to better the process of corrections and to better the entire process of criminal justice. We've noted, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that there has passed 18 years without an increase in witness fees. We also note that there has been no increase in the mileage compensation for witnesses, which is now 8 cents a mile, for the past 28 years. While during that period, of course, the price of gasoline and car repairs has gone up inestimably. We also note that the present fee of $5 for witnesses appears to us to be very unreasonable compensation, given the fact that witnesses must often wait long periods of time in order to make their appearance in the courtrooms, especially given the fact that the minimum wage in Oregon is $2.30 an hour, and if a person waits an 8-hour day, that he or she would be entitled to $18.40 for that day. The witness fee of $5 appears to us to be completely unreasonable. We are asking you to pass out this bill. We are asking you to send it down to Ways and Means. We do know there's an impact here on local government. As you are aware, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, a portion of the governor's budget will deal with increasing state support for witness fees and other aspects of county-mandated court costs, state-mandated court costs on counties, and the Ways and Means Committee should have this bill in order to take that into consideration along with the rest of the governor's package. If there are any questions that I can answer, I've done some research on the history, but suffice to say again that it's been 18 years without an increase for the fees for witnesses, and a 28-year period has passed since the mileage has gone up, and that's been far too long in our opinion.
Questions from the subcommittee? I have one. What is the mileage rate prescribed in 292250?
It's a maximum of 14 cents a mile, same as for state.
$20, if I recall correctly, is the same to the 20 or 25 in federal court.
I'm not sure.
I don't remember which, but it's... Representative Rutherford?
Do you know the a dollar amount of impact on local government?
$5.5 million per biennium.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Richards?
Is this amount not included in the... But the governor's request.
It's an overall request, and obviously we're going to have to organize and reorganize where the monies go to the counties when we make the aid bill. Senate Bill 20 goes down to Ways and Means. This will be in Ways and Means at the same time, and the apportionment of those funds to various parts of court costs will be made in Ways and Means.
How did the gross figure recommended by the governor, how was it arrived at?
Well, there were various, first of all, there was an overall amount that was available, and then we went through with both the State Court Administrator's Office and the Association of Oregon Counties as to how those figures should be partitioned, if you will, and reached an agreement on that. Now, with this, we will have to do a little more reallocation of those figures because this portion of the report was not available to the governor when
the budget was presented.
So this was not included in the request?
This was not included, so we're going to have to do some reallocation. It ought to be done on its merits, however, it's our feeling.
Thank you.
I assume from what you've said, then, that you would regard the $10 proposal in 2138 to be inadequate?
Yes.
Do you have any comment on the provisions of 2138 dealing with juror fees?
No, we also think, obviously, that that should go up, but we didn't look into juror fees as part of our work, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Frommeyer?
Ed, I've forgotten my civil procedure. Are these costs that are assessable against the losing defendant? Are these regarded as court costs that could be assessed?
I'm not sure, Mr. Chairman.
In a civil case, between prior litigants, they are infringement that is recoverable.
And of course, my mindset is on criminal law. I'm sorry, Representative Frommeyer, and I'm not sure. I know there are court costs that are accessible. They have been as a matter of practice, and I believe witness fees are, but I'm not sure.
I know that in Lane County it's become routine now to charge convicted defendants for the cost of their prosecution, and I wondered whether that...
That and attorney's fees,
yeah.
For representation. And I would imagine that, too, would be an includable cost.
The statute says, it's 2020, a party entitled to cost shall also be allowed for all necessary disbursements, including the fees of officers and witnesses, the necessary expenses of taking depositions, suspense, publication, summons, and so on.
No question that at least in a civil action, they are
yes.
disbursement and
yes.
recoverable.
That's right.
Further questions, Representative Frommeyer? Further questions from the subcommittee?
Well, one thing I was wondering if, and this is a concern rather than a question, I guess, if we were to increase this fee and then impact the counties for $5.5 million, if that would then be taken away from the amount of revenue that the counties expect to receive, so that we on the one hand are giving them some money and on the other hand reducing it by $5.5 million. That's a concern. That's a question, I guess.
We're certainly aware of that, and I imagine that Mr. Orrick and the Association of Oregon Counties will express that same concern. However, a similar bill to this was tabled, I think, by this committee last session because there just wasn't the money available. There is some money available now. It hasn't been raised in such a long time. It ought to be done.
The other thing I was wondering is if the $20 should be for a full day's attendance or whether it would cover the case. Very often police officers are called in on their day off to testify, and they might testify several times. And it could become very lucrative to be on your day off and be testifying.
And it has been done. I know, Mr. Chairman, Representative Rutherford.
Don't they have any arrangements by which fees
if they're
are
working,
returned?
Yes, if they're on a non-day off, then the fees would normally be returned to the sheriff or to the police agency. But if they're not working, then they would keep that fee.
Well, if they're not working, but they're called, that doesn't trigger a regular salary overtime
no.
kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
The fee is the only compensation.
I understand. That's correct.
There are a good many private employees covered by working agreements.
Yes.
Which also provide for the continuation of regular compensation
mm-hmm.
while serving on juries. This is a jury case,
yes.
really, but I'm jumping to that for a moment. But they require the employee to, in effect, turn over the
right.
fees that are paid
right.
to the employer. Further questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Richards.
Do you know how many different fields of work do provide ongoing salary while serving as a witness or juror?
That's left up to individual labor agreements or company policies.
You don't have any idea?
No. No. There's no way to survey that, really.
Okay.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Solomon.
Thank you.
See, Mr. Craig, you're down on 2276. Why don't you come up and also consider yourself free to go on to 2138 if you want.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Larry Craig, Staff Assistant to the Director of Justice Services, Multnomah County. Mr. Chairman, committee members, here today to speak on the economic impact of House Bills 2138 and 2276 on Multnomah County. Organizationally, Multnomah County budgets money for witness fees in the Circuit Court, the District Court, and the District Attorney. All jury fees are contained in the Circuit Court budget because, according to statute, the Circuit Court Administrator is the jury commissioner for Multnomah County. Further, by resting responsibility for jury administration in one individual, it is possible to achieve economy in the use of the monthly jury panel. Shown on my financial data sheet attached, the court administrator anticipates spending approximately $510,000 in fiscal 78 for jury fees. 2138 would double that figure to $1,020,000. Witness fees under this legislation would amount to $32,000. The total impact of 2138 on the circuit court would be $526,000. 2276, which would raise witness fees from $5 to $20, would raise the circuit court budget by $48,000, making the witness fee account $64,000. The district court under 2138 would go from $3,500 to $7,000, and under 2276 from $10,500 to $14,000. I might add that these are just the criminal, or excuse me, the civil witness fees that we're talking about here. The district attorney's office, where all the criminal witness fees are budgeted, anticipates spending $55,000 on witnesses in the next fiscal year. 2138 would raise that figure to $110,000, and 2276 to $220,000. The total economic impact on Multnomah County of 2138 would be $548,500, and 2276, $223,500. I feel it's interesting to note that the projected circuit court budget of $3,200,000, $1,082,000 is allocated professional services, and that represents the mandated costs that the court must pay, such as jury fees, witness fees, psychiatric evaluations. That's one-third of their budget. While the budget projections in Multnomah County are the brightest in 3 years, there's still a little room for fiscal latitude. If either of these bills are passed, the money required to pay for the increases will have to come from reductions in some other organization, for example, environmental or human services programs. This bill and others, such as Senate Bill 2, underscores the importance of Senate Bill 20, and I might also add the governor's court reimbursement bill, the number escapes me right now, which would appropriate monies for the state to assume some costs of the courts, including much of the costs contained in these bills. Philosophically, Multnomah County agrees with the intent of the legislation. $5 per day is far too little to pay citizens to sit on juries or appear as state witnesses. However, economically, Multnomah County would not be able to absorb an increase of this magnitude in its budget without affecting some other operation unless Senate Bill 20 or other legislation would become law. The other legislation would remove the responsibility for paying for something over which we have no managerial authority. Multnomah County urges that you consider the economic impact of this legislation in your deliberations.
I understand what you're saying is that you're not opposing either of the measures as such.
That's correct.
If the additional costs entailed were paid for by the state of Oregon.
That's correct.
In whole or at least in substantial part.
In some part, at least.
I also feel like you said you had no quarrel. Do you have any comment on the differing figures proposed for the fees of witnesses, aside from the cost element you've been describing? Has the county made an evaluation just on its merits on those proposals?
On the merits, the $20 would be preferable. I think you would find citizens much more willing to come forward and spend their time sitting in the courthouse waiting to testify if they knew they were going to be compensated at least somewhat close to what they would be being paid in the labor market for their time. You know, a private contractor, for example, who gets equipment stolen from him, has to come down and testify. And it's a one-man operation, a brick mason. He puts his hod carrier out of work, and he loses an entire day's income. That may amount to $150 if he has a good job going. $5 is no compensation. $20 would at least soften the blow some.
Questions?
How would you feel about a provision which treated people who spent the entire day there differently than those that spent, let's say, a half a day or less?
I wouldn't have any problem with it. The caveat I put in there is that it's difficult to tell how much time it does cost a person to come into the courthouse. If you ask them to be there at 9 to get out at noon, that may shoot his entire day. Or, you know, however, if they come in the afternoon, it may just pretty much destroy his morning, how much travel time he has involved, how much rearranging of his personal schedule. It also might be difficult to administer. You have to ask each witness, well, how long were you here? Divide up, figure out an hourly schedule for the person. Then you'd be paying them hourly.
How do you feel about the potential for multiplicity of test of witness fees in a particular day?
Potential is there. My own experience would tell me that it's a small potential. Very rarely does a witness, except expert witnesses, I will qualify that. And they're usually paid differently. Very rarely was a witness, say, going before four different courts in one day. Usually it's in front of one court.
Would you consider another schedule appropriate rather than $20 a day?
Now, $20 seems to be quite adequate, in my opinion.
But you think that that is the correct figure? It's not $10 or $15 or something like that?
I think it would meet minimum wage, which I think is a nice benchmark to use on something like this. $100 a week or about $225 an hour.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Oh, I have just one question for you. We were given a copy of a management study of Multnomah County Justice Services the other day in connection with testimony on the requested new circuit judge from Multnomah County. We haven't had copies distributed to us yet. Does that study deal with the county's handling of jurors, do you recall?
No, sir, it doesn't. No, it's strictly the clerk of the court function.
Mr. Orrick?
Chairman, members of the subcommittee, Jerry Orrick, representing the Association of Oregon Counties. We're rather ambivalent on the bill, Mr. Chairman. I think most of the points that have been brought out. In terms of cost impact, we are concerned. Contrary to Ed Sullivan's testimony, the cost impact estimated on House Bill 2138 is $5.5 million for the biennium. The bill that Mr. Sullivan was testifying on would have a less fiscal impact than that. We recognize that an increase in jury and witness fees is probably well justified. As Mr. Sullivan pointed out, it's been a number of years since those fees have been increased. They are low. Because they're low, they're probably having an effect on the quality of judicial system, being told that people are not registering to vote for fear that they may get called on jury duty. I think that situation's got to be corrected. But if the counties are to assume the additional cost burden, I think we've got to place ourselves in a position of opposing that kind of a cost impact. Now, we're in a little different situation this session because, as has been previously mentioned, there are two bills in the session to provide counties some relief. One is Senate Bill 20, which is in the Senate Local Government Committee with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The other bill is Senate Bill 5562, which is the Governor's Appropriation Bill, which is already in Ways and Means. Both of these bills would provide counties with some assistance in jury and witness fees. Just for a moment, I'd like to identify the interrelationship of a bill like this or any action to increase jury witness fees in those two bills. First of all, Senate Bill 20, the Senate Local Government Committee, provides for jury witness fee reimbursement at 100% for circuit court only. So even if that bill were to pass, the state would only pick up those costs in the circuit court. The counties would still carry the burden of the cost in the district court. Now, with reference to Senate Bill 5562, the governor's bill on waste means, that bill appropriates $11.5 million to be distributed for three purposes. Number one, 100% jury witness fee in both the circuit and the district court, estimated at about $5.5 million. That's the amount that the governor has placed in the bill for that purpose. And of course, the doubling, that's where we get the cost impact. The doubling of jury witness fees would be another $5.5 million. Secondly, the governor has an increase in the state subsidy for district attorneys. The state now pays $5,000 per deputy DA per year. The governor's proposal would raise that to $7,500. Then the third area, any money that's left over after paying jury witness fees and increasing the deputy DA supplement would be prorated in arrears among the counties for defense of indigents. And the impact that that House Bill 2138 would have on Senate Bill 5562 is to consume nearly the entire amount of that bill for jury witness fees. Jury witness fees would total somewhere in the neighborhood of $11 million at that point for the next biennium, and there would be about $500,000 left over for the biennium to try to distribute up among prosecution and indigent defense costs. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I have questions.
I misunderstood you, I guess. I thought you said that the amount proposed in the bill for the cost of district and circuit court witnesses was $5.5 million.
In the governor's bill?
Yeah.
Yes. The total governor's bill is $11.5 million. And the estimates breaking that down among the component parts in the bill, the three components I mentioned, places the jury witness fee burden at $5.5 million, which is an estimate based on a survey conducted by the Legislative Fiscal Office during this last interim period as a staff paper to the Interim Committee on Intergovernmental Affairs. That $5.5 million estimated in the government budget for jury witness fees is to cover fees at current rates or the inordinately low rates that are now paid.
Mr. Chairman, and Mr. Oreck, in that regard, you indicated that the doubling of the witness fees would impact the county's $5.5 million, but the witness fees are going up four times, not twice.
Well, that's in another bill. I was addressing myself, Representative Rutherford, to provisions of House Bill 2138, which I think just doubles both jury and witness fees. Doesn't quite increase mileage. It raises it from 8 to 14, which is not quite doubling, but fairly close.
House
Bill 2276 raises the witness fees from $5 to $20.
Let's get a quick recap. What is your estimate of the fiscal impact of 2138? Is that 5.5?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
And what is your estimate of the, do you have an estimate of the total impact if the witness fees went to 20 rather than 10 as proposed in 2138 and juror fees were doubled to 20?
No, sir, I have no impact data on that. That's why I wasn't signed up to testify on 2276. I have not seen any figures breaking out the cost. Now, Multnomah County witness did indicate some cost impact figures on that county, and I think we can take, for both bills, for each bill, and I think we can take those figures and multiply them by about four
to get the impact statewide, and I think they were annual figures, so we multiplied again by two to get a fiscal impact.
And we'll get that pulled together by staff. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is there anyone else here who is here on 2138 or 2276?
Yes, Mr.
Chairman. Mr. Hicks?
I'm Lauren Hicks, the State Court Administrator, appearing on behalf of the Oregon Judicial Conference in support of House Bill 2138, which was introduced at the request of the conference. Really, all I want to add to what's already been said is that the conference voted to have this bill introduced and support it only if the additional costs that it would engender were to be paid at least substantially by the state. They feel that probably the counties just simply can't afford this much of an increase, but that if the state perhaps could, and that in all fairness to the citizens, the few citizens who are called as jurors or subpoenaed as jurors and witnesses, really deserve a increase of doubling the what has been the fees for so many years. The same bill was introduced by the conference in the last session of the legislature, but it was tabled in the Senate Judiciary strictly on the basis that the legislature simply couldn't impose that much of a burden, financial burden, on the counties.
On its merits, does the conference have a position on the governor's proposal of $20 for witnesses?
No, that has never come before the conference. And there was just no discussion about any other alternatives other than doubling the present fees for witnesses, jurors, and almost doubling the mileage. The judges felt that there was no reason why jurors, particularly jurors, shouldn't be paid the same mileage as other people doing anything for the state government, and use the 14 cents a mile, which it is now, or if that's increased for the legislature at any time, then the increase would apply to people in the courts as well as state employees.
Questions? Representative Rutherford?
Your testimony then is in support of 2138, not 2276.
Yes, we've taken no position on the other bill.
So apparently it's
not opposed to it, but just haven't taken a position on it.
All right. Apparently it is the opinion then of the judicial conference that $10 is an adequate witness fee.
Yes, I think the theory would be, in the first place I might preface that by saying I believe in our discussion at the conference there was more feeling for the jurors than witnesses. And perhaps one reason for that is that jurors have no interest in the case, although sometimes witnesses do. Jurors are required to spend many days at court. Witnesses usually aren't unless they get involved in a very unusual case. And jurors, more often than witnesses, have to stay all day. If they get on a case, they're there all day for several days. Witnesses often don't have to stay and listen to the trial if they don't want to. Sometimes they have to wait their turn. But at any rate, usually the impact on the person's other activities is more severe for a juror than witness. So I think the judges feel that jurors perhaps deserve more favorable attention than witnesses. And if they were going to favor just one group or the other having their fees increased, I'm sure they would say it should be the jurors.
Further questions from Mr. Hicks?
Thank you
very much. Representative Starr, who was I believe the author of 2244, pointed out to the committee after we scheduled this bill that there was probably other legislation coming in on the question of the so-called electric dart guns, and asked that the committee might defer hearing on that question until they were all in. If there are any witnesses who come on 2244, however, we'll hear you now. Okay. House Bill 2170. Mr. Gillette, Mr. Brown, are you going to make a joint presentation?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Michael Gillette, State Solicitor General. Attorney Jim Brown from Benton County is with me today, and I brought him along for three reasons. The first is to demonstrate to the committee I do have friends. I think there's been some question about that. The second is because he understands the problem with sexual assault more than I do. And the third is because he drew these diagrams, so it ought to be his obligation to explain them. That's the last I'll say on the matter. Mr. Brown, explain it.
Let's see, I believe you've distributed to the committee small reproductions of these,
yes,
have you not? Do each of the committee members have those,
yes,
two documents?
District Attorney from Benton County. This is a, at least for me, a complicated topic. I think prosecutors, as a general matter of experience, find dealing with the assault code one of the most complex undertakings that we have. In contrast with other areas of the law on assault is conceptually very difficult, particularly as applied with a myriad of situations that arise. As I know the members of this subcommittee are aware, this assault code, our current law on assault, was adopted as part of the revision of the Criminal Code in 1972, and the code generally created a rational order of penalties, degrees of crimes, a stair-stepping of penalties, A, B, and C felonies, A, B, and C misdemeanors. And of course, in the felony crimes, an A felony has a maximum penalty of 20 years, a B felony a maximum of 10, and a C felony a maximum of 5 years. Of course, one of the other primary rationales of the new criminal code, in the 1972 criminal code, was an interrelationship of definitions and a relationship of crimes one to another, and particularly as when we talk about assault, the interrelationship of homicide and assault. Now, having said that, I'd like to indicate as strong as I can that the proposal that is that appears in the form of House Bill 2170 does not attempt to change in any way the so-called result orientation of the assault code. That's something that's been criticized from time to time, but this has nothing to do with that. The change was in 1972 that the level of the crime was defined in terms of what actually happened, what the result was, the degree of the injury involved. Prior to that time, several provisions of the assault law dealt in terms of the manner of force used, the conduct of the defendant, rather than that which he actually brought about. I think to state the problem, you can see the potential criticism for it, but that's not at issue here. Rather, 2170 simply proposes a regrouping of mental states and penalties. Mental states, of course, I think if one were to gather a group of citizens and say simply, who do we punish more, what are we most concerned about in terms of the way people behave, we would talk in terms of the person who intends conduct, deliberately does things, is the person we punish most severely. People who act recklessly should be punished under some circumstances, but to a lesser degree, and so on. Brings back the old saw that about even a dog knows the difference between a kick and a stumble. But this code recognizes those mental states. This revision is offered on the premise that irrationality gives offense to the law. And I submit to you the present law on assault has some inherently irrational provisions, at least when they're placed side by side. There are, to put it directly, anomalies in the current law.
The chart to your left, to my right, indicates the present law. Now, looking first, I have arranged across the top of the chart mental states in a descending order of, I think, generally accepted seriousness, ranging from intentionally or knowingly acting under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference for the value of human life, to acting intentionally or knowingly, to acting recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference, to acting simply with recklessness, which is defined in the code, or acting with criminal negligence, which is defined in the code. And of course, the basic difference between recklessly and criminal negligence in the code is one is undertaking knowingly encountering the situation, knowing that a substantial risk exists. The other is acting where the reasonable man, in effect, would have known there was a substantial risk, but not you yourself didn't personally perceive the risk, stating it badly. All right. Then, from left to right on the chart is mental states in descending order. On the left-hand side, on the far left, again in descending order, the seriousness of the result, ranging from the top to death. Then next is serious physical injury inflicted with a weapon. Under that, serious physical injury. Then physical injury inflicted with a weapon. To simply physical injury. And finally, simply endangering a person. Serious physical injury and injury, again, are defined in the code. Serious physical injury involves protracted impairment of physical condition, again, a serious threat of death. Physical injury is an impairment of physical condition and or accompanied by substantial pain. So that attempted to rank these things as feeling that we really had a lot of trouble understanding the way this code worked and the way it was applied. I set out to understand it by charting it. When we did this, we discovered the anomalies that I suggest to you, I believe, are anomalous and exist. For example, reading across the top of the chart, under reckless under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference and death. If death is caused by a person acting recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference, the crime is manslaughter in the first degree. It's a Class A felony. If you go down one step on the chart, and it's a matter of a serious physical injury caused by a weapon, but the person didn't die, and this serious physical injury by means of a weapon was caused with a mental state of recklessness under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference, it's the same level of offense. That's a Class A felony. In other words, whether you kill a person or not, acting with the same mental state, and even with a weapon, the mental state is the same. I submit that's anomalous. Moving to the left on that same chart, again under the old code, if one acts recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference and causes serious physical injury with a weapon, it's a Class A felony. That's recklessness. If, however, one did it intentionally and causes serious physical injury with a weapon, it's assault in the second degree and a Class B felony. In other words, at least for assault, it's a lesser crime if you acted intentionally than it is if you acted recklessly. But then you go up one level and you find that murder is to intentionally kill someone, but if it's the death is caused recklessly, it's knocked down to manslaughter, which is the A felony. That's probably the most egregious example.
Representative Frohmeyer?
May I interrupt you for a moment? Do these degrees and categories follow the model penal code, or is this a homegrown anomaly that you've discovered?
Well, Representative Frohmeyer, I'm not sure I can address myself to the model penal code. I frankly don't know as to that. One thing that may be a partial explanation is that this came out of the... This was enacted, of course, by the Revision Commission,
with a Class B and a Class C assault. Assault in the first degree was a Class B felony, and assault in the second degree was a Class C felony. Last session, those were each raised to A and B felonies, respectively. That created part of the muddle, and perhaps Mr. Gillette can respond more precisely than that.
Part of the anomaly, too, is the change we made last time. We just didn't think it through thoroughly enough. Part of the reason for that was there was a grouping of states of mind which was inexact and incorrect. And the proposal that Jim has put together now readjusts the groupings of state of mind to accord to at least our understanding of the seriousness with which we should treat assaults, at the same time the distinctions we should draw with respect to what somebody's thinking when they commit those assaults. We only did half the job last time. The original arrangement, David, as I understand it, closely approximated the model penal code. Quite frankly, I don't think they thought it through correctly either.
I would add, too, that somewhere along the line, we have the phrase has crept into the law, a mental state of intentionally or knowingly acting under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference. And I suggest if you think about that for a moment, that doesn't mean anything. You know, how can you intentionally shoot somebody? What does it add to say, I intentionally shot you under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference? So that's why, on the other side, on the proposal, we simply abandoned that and regrouped. I should have said earlier, too, that the use of a weapon enters into the ranking, that the use of the weapon is considered as more serious conduct, and that contributes to the ranking of the mental states.
Mm-hmm.
The current state of the law causes conceptual problems, and it also causes all kinds of problems on lesser included offenses when juries are instructed in terms of lesser included. If you have intentional acts as ranked under reckless acts, an intentional act can't be a lesser included offense of a reckless. It just, it's not done. And it's also contrary to the law elsewhere. Finally, a fourth degree of assault has been created, among other things, to cure the gap that exists between a B felony and an A misdemeanor. That is a substantial reason for creating the other degree. If I may, I think I can illustrate a couple things on the chart, Mr. Chairman, with your permission.
Go ahead.
In effect, the anomaly that I described can be seen by moving vertically, that that's a result of physical injury, a lesser result than death, serious physical injury, produces the same penalty, a felony, and so on. At the same time, we view intentionally as a higher state of mind than recklessness. But here, just in the assault category, it becomes a lesser penalty for what I submit is a higher mental state, and certainly is a higher mental state than homicide. The resisting the impulse to put symmetry over everything else, there is symmetry created by this proposal, and whether it's a hobgoblin in my mind or not, one can see that moving laterally that the symmetry is created. Through the A, B, C, just following the model of homicide. Murder, of course, is punishable statutorily by violence, and then moving across the mental states goes A, B, C, and this is omitted, but that's a C felony, criminally negligent homicide.
I was at first having a little trouble seeing why it was necessarily anomalous that you would have a Class A felony characterization for a serious physical injury with a weapon and death under the same mental state. But is that the result orientation that we're back to? About which I guess there is some question.
Yeah. So I think we accept that.
You got another billion on
the law, at least, for
But the most, I mean, obviously the unquestionable anomalies are the ones that arise moving moving left to right across the charts, where you're moving from a B to an A back to a B.
So in effect, what's written in the 2170 is simply a codification of the other chart.
Question, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bugis?
Did you ever make a charge or ever hear of a prosecution with the use of that phrase, reckless under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference? What if it wouldn't be a good time to clean that out of the code? Is that, if it's meaningless?
Well, no, I think it applies.
Wait a minute, you say you didn't understand it.
Well, if I did, I misspoke myself, Representative.
That would be intentionally.
Intentionally. Manifesting extreme indifference. I'm, that's at the far left side, the upper corner. And we abandon that on the proposal.
Oh, I see.
So your first, so you got this mental state is just straightforward, intentionally causing serious physical injury to another.
And that's the law of homicide. Basically, this matches, purports to match mental states consistent with the law of homicide.
But that's still in the code.
Yes, sir, it is. And we're really not quarreling with that. See, one of the reasons this becomes important is because if I shoot the Solicitor General and have the misfortune to be unsuccessful, then Mr. Gartmaker would undoubtedly charge me with attempted murder. Then you get an overlap of the lesser included if I testify and people believe that I didn't intend a killing, then the lesser included offense is assault. And that's, then the conundrums start to appear.
I have a question. Now, subsection 1 amends the definition of assault in the first degree to read, if he intentionally causes serious physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon. And then assault in the first degree is a Class A felony. And then section 2 amends the definition of assault in the second degree, and it says, commits it if he intentionally or knowingly causes physical injury to another by means of a deadly or dangerous weapon. Aren't those two completely contradictory? What have I missed?
The word serious.
Serious.
I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
Will the ultimate result of this be to have raised all of the crimes for assault one level from 4 years ago? What I'm wondering, you say you created the anomaly because you pushed one group up. Now are we pushing all the other groups up to now accommodate that? Or?
Some of these are being dropped. For example, infliction of a serious physical injury with a weapon is presently, recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference, is currently an A felon. This proposal asks that it be dropped to a B felon. Whereas the intentional infliction of a serious physical injury is presently a B felony, we're asking that be raised to an A. It's a regrouping. Frankly, I haven't sat down and tried to figure where this was 5 years ago. Some of them, as a practical matter, since there's only one A felony now in the assault under the proposal, that's the only one I can definitely say is higher than it was 5 years ago, because there wasn't any A felony assault out of the revision. That would be the one change.
The committee could obviously depart from the proposed assignments of seriousness of classification in terms of the result aspect. Apart from that, a good deal more rationality perhaps than from the proposal, the aspect of the proposal that deals with moving across and providing a descending level of severity for the different mental states. In the former case, we're bumping up against the result orientation of the code. Are we doing anything more than that? If, for example, the committee were to feel it didn't want to drop the severity of the treatment of serious physical injury with a weapon committed under certain mental states, well, it could resolve the other anomaly.
It seems to me that there are two categories of policy legislative determinations implicit in my analysis. One is the ranking of mental states, and the other is ranking of the results coupled with a weapon, including the weapon. I think in terms of reassessing, and the committee making different determinations than those suggested, one anchor should be consistency with the law of homicide. Because of the attempt situation, where attempted murder always invariably brings out instructions, requested jury instructions involving assault. So I think it's important that the law of assault at least be consistent in the rankings in terms of mental state with those in homicide. Obviously, you're dealing only with one result of homicide, death. But I think that needs to be the touchstone. I'm not sure if I'm articulating that very well. Following that, then, the only consideration that I would urge, particularly in response, Representative Myers, is that intentionally and knowingly be maintained at a higher level, or at least an equivalent level, to recklessness. Because if you don't, then as a matter of law, an intentional act can't be a lesser included offense of recklessness.
Oh, I understand that.
Okay.
But just briefly, you're not adding any new definitions to the section or any new concepts. It's just a rearranging of them.
Rearranging. Okay. The one thing that is new is the creation of a Class C felony. Oh.
But we have a definition in the code already for that particular mental state that's required. Okay.
Yes, there's no new mental state created. It's a regrouping and rearranging.
Representative Rutherford?
You make reference to the crime of recklessly endangering. Is that covered in another section? Another
yes, it is. That's a Class A misdemeanor, and it's called recklessly endangering another person. And that's simply, for sake of analysis, would probably just as well have been left off, but for my sense of symmetry.
I didn't sit here, and that's what's wrong with it. ORS 163.195.
Representative Fumler? I'm looking here now at the first degree felony. Have you narrowed the definition of that by excluding assaults committed without the aid of a deadly weapon?
Let's see. The proposal is that assault in the first degree, the aid felony, would be committed by intentionally causing serious physical injury by means of a deadly or dangerous, by excluding, was that your question?
If you read the deleted language and if you look at the included language there, and let's take a hypothetical. If you
push a person off of a second story or third story of a building intending to kill that person, and the person instead is a quadriplegic, you haven't got a first degree assault because it's not been done with a weapon.
But you have attempted murder, which is a Class A felony.
So that would be the charge. The charge would be just under murder, rather than an attempt.
And then if the jury found that you didn't intend to kill, then the lesser included offense would be the Class B felony of assault in the second degree. Causing serious physical injury without a dangerous or deadly weapon.
The answer to your original question, I think, would be yes.
I mean, in some sense, you have narrowed it because if each has a lesser included offense, you would not be able to include life-threatening activity that did not have a deadly weapon.
Well, let me say, as far as the lesser included offense is still present.
Yeah, but it's a lesser included offense.
Well,
let me
think a lesser included is automatically having a lower penalty.
Yeah, all right, but here's my hypothetical. I'm just trying to understand this, and
sure.
I may not. Under the old law, you try to push somebody off a building. You got attempted murder, and if the jury comes in with a little less than that, well, then at least you have a Class A felony, i.e., knowing or recklessly extreme indifference. If, under your changes, you'd have attempted murder, but the first of the lesser included offenses that the jury could come back with would be a Class B felony rather than a Class A felony.
Well, that's correct, but bearing in mind that attempted murder is a Class A felony. Because attempts are all penalty-wise one step down. And since murder is penalized by life, then the attempted murder is a Class A felony.
Okay, under the old law, though, you would have both the attempt or the lesser included offense would both be Class A felonies then.
That's correct.
Under this change, the attempt would be a Class A felony, but the first of the lesser included offenses would be a Class B felony.
That's right.
And that's because of the weapon limitation.
Uh-huh. And the anomaly that I submit is that, in your example, Representative Von Meyer, if you push the man off the building and you say you didn't intend to kill him, and take the stand and he testifies, I didn't intend to kill him, I intend to make him a paraplegic because he was messing around with my wife. A jury could find that because it was an intentional act, I think I painted myself in a corner.
I didn't. Keep going.
No, that's right. Under existing law, if it was an intentional act, it would be a B felony. If it was recklessly under circumstances manifesting extreme indifference, it'd be an A felony under existing law. And that was
Mr. Chairman, if I might, that created the ultimate anomaly with respect to jury instructions. The breeder included offense.
that's why your use of the words lesser included didn't fit, because you were talking about things on the same level.
We have actually been faced with circumstances in which we had the sideways included offense. two offenses which involved different culpable mental states but which had the same penalty. That's the sideways included offense, or in criminal law, the lateral arabesque. And also the greater included offense. That is to say, no, I didn't intend to, I just did it recklessly, so I'm guilty of a more serious crime.
What was your term of art, Mr. Joy?
There goes the dying form.
The sideways included offense.
No, the lateral
arabesque. That's it. So we go.
But then you have a situation, you double charge, you double count. In the indictment, and Representative Cronmeyer's example,
you probably triple.
And then the court requires you to elect, and then where are you?
Yeah. You charge murder, or attempted murder, and assault, probably both, wouldn't you?
Well,
you wouldn't, but how are you going to instruct the jury is the problem.
Well, wouldn't you instruct them? They could find either.
Well, if the jury really listens and they're told that what is obviously to them a more serious mental state, intentional, constitutes something which sounds to them like a less serious offense, and they're right, it is, they're going to wander out and determine the judge's crazy. It's not crazy, the statute's crazy. He just read them. But it really is a problem, and on appeal it's a problem, because there's a complaint that the court should have instructed on the lesser included offense. Actually had an appeal for the complaint which the court did not instruct on the quote lesser included offense, close quote, which carried a greater penalty. the lawyer in arguing that never checked the penalty to see.
Jim, do all the judges in the state instruct the jury as to what the penalty is?
No.
They never say it, do they?
No.
So under your situation, that the jury hears an instruction, and what they interpret as a lesser mental state, or the act that the person consummated actually turns out to be the greater penalty, if the jury would see it like that.
They understand that sometimes. They're represented cool and gossip even when the offense is labeled by degree. Okay. They can understand that assault in the first degree and assault in the second degree are different. The first sounds worse than second. They're not that naive. That's the problem.
And of course, they are presented with a verdict point.
Was the major that created this anomaly last year sponsored by the District Attorney's Association?
Yeah. Voted for by most of the members of the committee, too.
And argued for by this witness.
Was the anomaly created last session?
No, half the anomaly existed before. We just exacerbated it.
Further questions?
I've got some here, but I can't.
Representative Cronmeyer.
Figure out what I'm thinking about. If you guys have some, go ahead.
Anyone else while Representative Frommeyer is pulling his lateral arabesque out of the air?
He liked that.
Do an action.
I think I understand the answer to that question. You make provision for criminal negligence which causes serious physical injury?
No, there wasn't any
such provision in the pre-existing law.
Is there any need for that, for such a classification? You have criminal negligence that causes physical injury, but none that causes serious physical injury unless that's subsumed or implied by one of the other categories.
It's subsumed by physical injury includes serious physical injury, so if by definition it's a Class A misdemeanor. It means, do we have a Class C felony? No, we don't.
That's a policy choice, and I think that the commission made, among other things, in that at a certain level of conduct gives rise to civil damages. Not true. My experience, I wouldn't follow that.
Further questions? Thank you both.
Nick, before you leave, has Henning seen this from up in Portland?
Yeah. No.
Could you do that? And would you ask him just to let Bronca know if he has what his opinion on it is?
Representative, I can call him.
Could you do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll finally expedite it by having Dennis just call
him. He, by the way, is the public defender of Multnomah County. I guess that's the title, isn't it?
Well, he's supposed to be getting the hearing notices of the committee.
Well, he's getting them.
And I presume he knew this bill was on today. We've had no comment. You can verify that he got the notice and had no comment because he had no objection.
I will verify.
Objection.
Okay.
Sir, didn't the public defender and the public defender, is it all the same thing?
Well, there is a public defender who handles, what is it, post-conviction and an appellate?
That's state.
That's here in Salem.
Right.
We're talking about the Metropolitan Public Defender. And
Joel Henning is the Metropolitan Public Defender, same office.
Jim. Jim here.
Okay, same office as the girl that was here yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I wasn't hearing that.
Who's going to handle all that insanity?
Nellie Johnson.
That's a
Metropolitan. Jeff Mutnick.
Molnick. Jeff Molnick.
I thought it was Mutnick.
The guy that's standing on the line, he may be he's on that governor's test.
Yeah.
Let's quickly go back over the bills before we adjourn and see if there are any on which the committee, clerk committee, wishes to make a recommendation now or whether there's further information on. Bill the two witness fee bills obviously have significant fiscal impact on counties, which part of which at least is being addressed by measures we now before Ways and Means. Does the committee wish to defer action on these on our part until we've had a chance to see some fiscal analysis developed and presented to the committee beyond what we have now?
Chairman.
Representative Frommeyer.
My feeling is that I'm not sure even our own evaluation, fiscal evaluation, would make any difference in the long run unless we just wanted to stop them here as opposed to stopping them in Ways and Means.
That's what I'm...
I think the only question is whether we boost them along and let them make a judgment.
The only reason we would evaluate that material here would be if, in terms of our stopping it or reducing it or whatever. But, I'm inclined to think that on these subsequent referral bills, we ought to look at them pretty much on their merits. And
well, except I would say this, that I'm willing to see, I'm not willing to see either one of them out of this committee, except with a recommendation that they not pass Ways and Means unless the governor's budget is funded adequately to send the money downstream to pay for it.
I don't know if the committee report itself can be informed that way, but we can let that word can get to Ways and Means.
Can we send a letter to that?
Yes, that would be the way we'd have to handle it, I think.
Does the county revenue sharing proposal where the state picks up the court cost include this?
Well, no, some of them, but one of them was given birth before or after the governor's proposal had been set down.
I was trying to consider what our role should be, too. And we kept talking about the fiscal impact, but I began to think, well, really, that's not our concern. Our question should be, is it good policy, and then we should send it down and accompany with a letter that we have, however, this proviso.
Well, I'm perfectly agreeable to the committee taking that view. The rest of the committee is.
I am.
All right. Well, why don't we take a moment to talk about the bills and their merits?
Well, as a matter of fact, it's going to be the only chance we have to discuss the our attitude about the whether or not we feel that the state ought to pay for it if we do indeed recommend it for funding.
Well, I think that so if we the question of whether we also send a letter to Ways and Means saying we think it ought to be conditioned on that is an issue that's subject to decision on the part of the committee.
Okay, but I don't think there's anything wrong, if I may express my opinion. I don't think there's anything wrong with sending it down to, let's say, with the new path, in view of the fact that we think it's more fair in light of what other states surrounding us do or whatever makes us pass it along, but I don't think it's out of line for us to recommend what they do down there. I'm not clear from the testimony, and I apologize for not being here.
No, it's not out of line at all. Maybe.
Is this going to, didn't I understand that part of this was contemplated in the governor's budget?
Yes, that's my understanding. The one bill is...
Part, but not all.
Well, the one bill, the governor's task force bill deals only with witness fees.
Didn't I understand some conversation here after I came in to say that they failed to, when they recommended that $11.5 million, it did not include the compensation at the new level.
That's right.
My understanding is that they have not proposed an amount which would cover this expenditure, which is another reason why we should send it down early so that...
Yeah, okay. So if we send it down saying we think this is a good bill and witnesses ought to be compensated better, we ought also to say, however,
right,
this means that you've got to fund, even
right,
if you're inclined to fund that $11.5 million, right, this means another half million or whatever it is.
And if you don't, then we don't think we don't think the bill should go to the floor.
I suggest that we look at 2138 first,
right,
to determine if we want to also address the question of jurors' fees. I personally think jurors' fees are more pressing than witness fees. And whether or not we act on witness fees, I for one think we ought to act on jurors' fees.
My impression is that 2138 is the better measure of the two. I think the other one overcompensates witnesses, but that this is a fair compensation to witnesses, and it also covers the juror problem, which I think is a more pressing problem, as you say.
Second motion.
All right, that is a Should I take that as a motion then for a recommendation of the full committee?
Yes.
For a due pass as to 2138?
Yes.
Any discussion on that motion, to the recommendation? Any objection to that motion? It's approved unanimously.
Just keep my cost bill down, Bill.
Could I also have a recommendation, may I also take it to be the recommendation of the committee that for formal purposes we would table 2276? Any objection to that as the recommendation?
Let's see how broad the tweet is. Which has the broader time?
I think it's accepted by...
2138 speaks of fees of, I think, wait a minute.
2276 is the governor's task force bill, isn't it?
Check the file.
We may need a broad title someday soon.
We can always take it off the table.
Don't table, you'll get Sullivan all upset if he finds out the task force bills are being tabled.
No.
Be careful.
Substitute.
Oh, Ed, tabling the task force bills.
Well, I think Mr. Sullivan ought to be big enough void to realize that if we spin out some part of what he's proposed and gone on and addressed another portion, because there are other bills we have from the task force that he will cry a lot more about if we table them, I believe. Any objection to a recommendation to tabling 2276 for formal purposes only?
He could always get some instruction from Mr. Gillette on how to handle that.
I would formally protest. Informally.
Representative Kulongoski objects. Recommendation there will be for tabling on 2276.
Make report that to Ed that I vigorously fought to prevent the tabling of the task force.
Well, you might
have a few calls.
Anywhere else?
If you saw some reciprocity cases.
Do you want to exit 2170?
2170. Is there a motion on that?
I'll move it too fast or something. Well, we didn't do it.
Motion is to recommend to the full committee a due pass recommendation on 2170. Any discussion on that motion? Any objection to that motion?
I would hope that we would get Henning's comments. I'd hate to get it before the full committee and all of a sudden it just blows up and I don't know.
Can I move it up pending an affirmative?
Yeah, that's fine.
No, why don't we move it forward? You know, Henning's would be here by the full committee anyway.
Oh, yeah. He could come before the full committee.
If motion's adopted, it'll be with the understanding that Mr. Bronson will be in touch with Mr. Hennings. And if Mr. Hennings has objections, had the notice, didn't contact us, will you please tell him to get down here on the first hearing? Any objection to the motion? Anything else at this time?
The dark bench.
Well, there was no one here, and George Starr had requested that we carry that to the rest of the Marines in the hearing. There was two or three.
The problem with the dark bench is that it's not a deadly weapon.
Anything else?
Okay.
All right, if not, we'll be adjourned on Monday 1:30.